What's up, fellow travelers? Welcome to Traversing the Stars. I'm JD. I've done a couple of cool interviews, but I am actually exceptionally excited about this one. Please welcome the Reverend Chad Wells. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hello, JD. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, man. I got a four-day weekend ahead of me. I got no complaints.
Yeah, absolutely. Same.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Yep. So I'm a huge fan of your music. And to everyone at home who is as of yet uninitiated, tell us a little bit about yourself and the Jackalopes.
So the Jackalopes, I had been in a band for about 10 years prior to the Jackalopes called COH, which was short for Carcass on the Highway.
Love it.
And it was like this crazy thing. It went on forever. And we got to a certain level in the local music scene, but we were kind of kids from the wrong side of the tracks, and we weren't the cool guys or whatever. And we were kind of grunge before grunge. And so we had a hard time breaking through the doors. Along the way, I had met a gentleman by the name of George Bradley, who would go on to become GG Migraine, and then GG Jackalope and GG Bradley, whatever. And he was in a band called the Migraines that were they were kind of blowing up in the pop punk scene. But they were adjacent to what COH was doing. Like they had, they were a pop punk queers, Riverdale, Screeching Weasel kind of band. But they also would do like Alice Cooper covers and, and Eddie Migraine or Sean Browning, the lead singer, would, you know, he was into heavy metal and stuff like that, just like I was. So we had a lot to talk about. And Gigi and I actually had run across each other you know, quite a bit in those early years of COH and stuff. And like, we didn't really like each other, but we kept ending up on bills together. We sort of, we represented a similar quality and ethos, I guess. And so anyway, Gigi had been on tour with the Migraines, this full US tour that was massive. And while he was out on the road, he was getting burned out on the Migraines. They were a band that was in Fort Wayne. He was here in Dayton, Ohio. And so he was driving 3.5 hours for rehearsals and
That's a lot.
And then the touring started to get to him, with that particular band. There was a lot of hijinks and stuff like that. So, and then a big accident. It was really kind of a dramatic affair, but, the whole time he was writing to me back here and telling me how we needed to do a band. I needed to bury COH finally, get out of that band. It had become an anchor. And with his sort of help in putting a spoonful of sugar into the medicine that I was selling, we could be something great. And he kept telling me that. And I was like, okay, kid, you know, he's only a few years younger than me, but I kind of felt like he was a younger guy. So, okay, kid, whatever. And, but I was watching all these things that he was doing, all these contacts that he had. And he's a fantastic bass player. He was very energetic. And so, he started sending Jackalopes postcards because they were in Wyoming and things like that on tour. And, he loved the Ramones, the Riverdales, the Queers, the Groovy Ghoulies, all of those bands. So he wanted a band that had that kind of a vibe. But also at the time, bands like Nashville Pussy and the Super Suckers and Electric Frankenstein were happening, and we were into that stuff. So we tried to do this like super beast of a band that became the Jackalopes. And, you know, we never got rich and famous or anything like that, but we got to open for so many of our heroes and play like really big shows. And we put out, you know, a handful of recordings that people sort of, have fallen in love with. It's one of those weird. I remember being a kid and having to drive 2 or 3 states to get a Misfits single, you know, prior to the internet. And we're one of those bands for certain people. They, you know, I see our CDs go for, you know, hundreds of dollars on eBay and weird stuff like that all the time. And it's cool. It's really cool.
I mean, well, and you know, it's, I'm one of those people, and you know, it's funny, 'cause like we were talking a little bit off air, you know, about how I discovered you guys. And so, you know, I first heard about you guys through because of Wednesday 13. So I'm a huge Wednesday 13 fan. got into Murder Dolls. Like, you know, I was into Slipknot in high school, and then like Murder Dolls came out, and I was like, this is fucking awesome. I was kind of still like forming, like, you know, at that point I was still just like, I'm just like metal, but like, you know, so I hadn't really gotten into punk at that point. Totally. So that was kind of my introduction to punk. And then it was, I think, the Horror High album that had a bunch of bands on it. I think like the new singer from the Misfits was on it. Calibres was on it, but you guys were on it with Night You Died. And that's how I discovered it. And it was like, dude, when I heard Night You Died, I just fucking fell in love. I was like, I gotta know more about these guys. And I just, it just kind of took off from there.
Oh, thank you so much. That's a huge compliment. That song, there were certain songs that from us playing them live, we considered them our hits. And that song is actually sort of a second. That's Gigi Bradley actually left the band and joined a band called The Story Changes. That those guys are now in Hawthorne Heights. But he went and joined that band and left us in a bit of a lurch. But luckily, I had a little brother named JJ, coincidentally, that sort of was the same basic stature as Gigi and played bass also and had similar influences. So JJ replaced Gigi in the Jackalopes. And JJ, that was his songwriting contribution. His main songwriting contribution for the band was the music for that. Like those are my lyrics. But like that was his. So that's super awesome to me that that's the song that got you in, because that's like that one's extra special because that's got double the genetics in it, you know, with my brother. That compilation, Wednesday 13, when Gigi was in the Migraines, the Migraines toured or did several dates with the Frankenstein drag queens from Planet 13.
Yeah, love those guys. Love them. I got into them too. They're fucking awesome. That's,
I mean, it's basically that first Murder Dolls album.
It's just all
Frankenstein drag queen songs with, you know, much, much better rhythm section. So with Joey Jordison. So, so that we had a little bit of a contact with Wednesday. And the horror scene, the horror punk scene was really blowing up at that time. Thanks to MySpace and all of that kind of stuff. We started all blipping on the radars of like people like Tommy Lee from Motley Crue and stuff like that. Those kind of people started kind of backing us. And there was, I can't remember what the full deal was with Horror High, but Horror High had some relation to Tommy Lee and a clothing brand. And they wanted to put out a thing that was like representative of the cream of the crop horror punk bands. And we were super excited to be on there. And we were always kind of on the edge. You know, we were a horror band, but we were
full on horror. There was like kind of a mix in there.
Yeah, like B-movie stuff, like 60s and 70s exploitation kind of stuff. Like we kind of toyed with a little bit of everything. And then, you know, my weird Charles Manson occult stuff that I'm into. We definitely found a home in the horror punk scene, and we were really excited to be a part of a bunch of great horror punk comps from that era. Stillborn Monster Babies, it was like a tribute to the Misfits. Spasmatic Records did a Sam Hain tribute that we did a double two songs on. There was a bunch of stuff, but that one had legs. Like I've gotten so many like emails and letters and whatever from people who like they've played that song at their brother's funeral who was in the military and that was his favorite song or whatever, and it's just that's really weird and cool and it's nice
like kind of contribution to society, man.
My whole thing growing up as a kid, you know, I was a library rat and I wanted to read every book in the library, but the ones that really drew my eye were like horror movie books and, you know, stuff about you know, cryptids and that kind of thing and all of that kind of stuff. But rock and roll books, like there were like books like called the Encyclopedia of Rock and Roll, and you know, this is an era before the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all of that, and like I would go through there and you know, I'd see bands that I really like Kiss or Alice Cooper and those things, or the Beatles. But like, it was the footnote bands that really excited me. It was like, oh, there was a band in 1971 called Hookfoot, and they were Elton John's guys, but they split off and they did this amazing album, you know.
Yeah.
Those footnote bands are actually my favorite bands.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what the Jackalopes ended up being, and really probably my most recent thing, Cricket Bows. We end up being really strong footnote bands, and I'm stoked about that.
Totally. That's awesome. That. Yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of like you put that out in the universe a little bit and then kind of just like,
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Absolutely.
I love it.
Super cool.
Yeah. So let me know if this is too personal, but I've always wondered this. So who is Night You Died about?
Okay. So this is actually a crazy story.
Okay.
So first and foremost, let me say that song was the Jackalopes' attempt to modernize.
Yeah.
Everything that we were doing up to that point was really based in like 1950s rock and roll.
Yeah.
And mixed with 70s punk and maybe a little 80s punk. Yeah. And some metal influences and stuff. But it was really specifically older influences. But we were all listening to like AFI.
Yeah.
So younger guys were listening to My Chemical Romance and things like that. Actually, I think we may have predated them. I don't remember. But anyway, those kind of bands, those like Hot Topics bands or whatever, were really happening.
Yeah.
And my brother, JJ, who is 10 solid years younger than me, that was the kind of music he was into.
Yeah.
Dashboard Confessional and like the emo bands, like the heavier emo bands. And so that was an attempt to write basically an AFI song at that point in time. I don't know if we hit it or not. I think we landed in our own zone. But the lyrics to that song, there was a guy that I was best friends with as a kid from the time we were 10 years old. We would, you know, he was one of the main guys that I would like spend the night at his house.
Yeah.
And he would spend the night at my house, and we would make tapes where we were like pretending to be radio DJs. And I was Cherry Chad and he was Diamond Dave.
Love it.
And we would do these radio shows and put play records and stuff. And this guy, I kind of got him into punk rock was part of what got him into punk rock. And I, as a kid, I was very extreme. I came from an abusive family, lots of divorce and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, it made me who I am.
So right.
You know, how bad could it be?
Right.
So when I got into punk rock and that, like, I was very extreme. Like, I did all the drugs. I drank a lot. Like, I was very self-destructive. Like, we broke stuff and set stuff on fire, and we played with guns, and like, we were bad suburban bad kids,
basically. You know, just textbook punk.
Textbook, yeah, absolutely, hoodlum kids. And I think I kind of helped drag him in there, because he was like an honor roll kid, and all of that. And so I dragged him into it. Fast forward, he and I have a falling out at a certain point in time, because I'm kind of, you know, we're out of high school by this point, and I'm trying to settle down. I'm going to art school and stuff like that. And he's like homeless squatter punk, like riding trains, and he's doing the hard drugs,
you
know, and everything. And then, years and years later, I tattoo this girl who was a mutual friend, and I asked about him, and she said, oh no, you didn't hear, he died. He was a prostitute in New York to pay for his heroin, and somebody like tied him up and tortured him and killed him, and it was a terrible scene.
Shit.
And I mean, it just devastated me. And I felt responsible. And I wrote that song about it, and it was completely heartfelt. And then about 7 or 8 years after I wrote that song, he added me on social media, and it hadn't happened. He wasn't actually dead at all. He lives in Hawaii now. He has a lovely family.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it was a girl transmitted some really bad news to me. And because it was in a time really before, like, you know, he wouldn't have had a cell phone or anything. I didn't have an address. I wasn't in contact with his friend. So I just believed it.
Yeah.
And I went through this mourning phase for my friend who I had lost, and I had let him down and everything. And come to find out he was okay. He had been in California, then Alaska, and then Hawaii. So that's why he was off the map. So
holy shit.
Yeah. And it's, you know, what's funny, so many Jackalope songs are fictional. Like,
right.
I often write from the perspective of a character
right.
that's not at all me. I'm often like, I'm kind of like lighting that character up. Like
yeah.
We would take a lot of our sort of like, we were all raised a little bit Midwestern white trash, you
yeah.
know? And I say that's a terrible, probably, that's probably going to get us kicked off Facebook or something. If that,
I don't care. We got Instagram and all the other shit.
That phrase gets used. But you know, redneck kind of backgrounds or rebel yeah. flags around and things like that. So we did a band where like sort of part of the imagery was to send that up and to like poke holes in it a little bit. Like,
yeah,
we have a song called Pristine 15.
That, yeah.
Is about a guy who's after a young girl. And it's a very inappropriate song.
Oh, absolutely.
It
also feels a little bit like a tribute to Christine 16 a little bit.
Too. Oh yeah. Well, 100%. Like Kiss is probably one of my all time favorite. I have those guys tattooed on my hands.
I fucking love
it. Yeah. So I was wanting to go one better than Kiss, basically.
Like, yeah.
What can we do to go one better than Kiss? let's make her a year younger.
It's like seven minute abs of rock and roll.
And it was really, truthfully, we had enough drummers that I won't be selling anybody out to say this, but
yeah.
one of our drummers had some kind of inappropriate feelings for a very young girl. And I kind of wrote that was like coming to our shows and she was around and stuff. So I kind of wrote that song as like, I was kind of letting him see how creepy it was.
Yeah.
But the messed up part of it was every show we played after that, my wife hated that song.
I've been married
the whole time, monogamous and, you know, very kind of vanilla.
Yeah.
But, we would play shows and girls started dressing like the girl that I described in the song and requesting the song at these shows. So it kind of became like, honey, I'm sorry. I said I wouldn't play it, but there's 10 girls down here in black striped thigh highs that want me to play that song.
They got to give them what they want. I mean,
but you know, some of the songs were, you know, Rumble Downtown is like my own little twist on the Outsiders or, you know, whatever it's that. And, but that one, The Night You Died, was really, that was autobiographical, everything in there. I remember running through the graveyard, kicking over tombstones, digging up old bones. Like, we were bad kids doing bad things and spooky things. And it was completely from the heart and real.
Yeah.
And then not. So.
Yeah. That's I was not expecting that at the end of that. Like, what the fuck? Like,
the twist there is kind of epic.
Well, it's funny because, like, I mean, I've always kind of thought, like, you know, when you listen to the songs, that's the one that feels like the most like real. But there's also like, there's an undeniable realness about the rest of it too. Like, at least that's what I feel when I listen to it.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, where we're coming from as the Jackalopes, I think, like, I wrote all the lyrics. So I say we, and really everybody just kind of co-signed with whatever I was edging toward. They were musically there with me, and you know, they had come up in the same kind of background, and it all made sense. But it really is like it is. I mean, it's a character thing. Some things are based. You know, we were watching Troma and other, you know, like horror things and stuff like that. But like a lot of it, like the weird area in Dayton, Ohio, I don't know, where are you from? I don't even know where you're from.
East Coast, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. Well, so you get it. There are those areas where it's like, have you ever seen the movie Gummo?
No.
Or Kids, or like, I mean, that's a New York City thing. Anyway, it's really weird. Like, it's gritty. Like, there's an undercurrent here. There's a lot of like bikers, truckers, crystal meth. You know, like, it's I can 20 feet in any direction, not 20 feet, but 10 minutes in any direction, and I can be somewhere where there's a lot of rebel flags and
Same.
like, That kind of thing. Well, especially now, that used to be sort of in one corner of the world, but we're in a world now where
now it's everywhere.
Like, hi from Victoria, British Columbia. This is my rebel flag. Like, what?
What the fuck are you doing?
So it's a lot of this stuff. Like, you know, I had friends that most of my friends that I was really close to have kind of passed away or ended up in jail. Like it was rough and real. And I think that's what, with even when it's something that's totally not real, I am putting that, like,
kind of tapping into the realness of it. Yeah.
Like, I like horror that feels that way. I like just movies in general. Like, one of my favorite directors is a local guy named Jim Van Beber. He's a very polarizing figure. He's very politically incorrect these days.
Yeah.
But his films have that, like, quality of, like, it's like Taxi Driver meets, you know, it's just gritty, realistic, but it's like that in and of itself becomes kind of weird and bizarre and fun.
Yeah.
Although there are times where, you know, like Burning Down the World for us, that song, I don't know if you know that one. There's church burning, there's a school
shooting, Columbine shooting,
killing the parents. You know, for a while I used to share that song or the video for that every time something happened.
Yeah.
Another school shooting. I would share
it. The world. Yeah.
And I hit the point where I was sharing that song 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And I had to feel like this is sick now. Like, and it's sick that I feel like, oh, school shooting, somebody burned a church, share the song.
Yeah.
And like, it kind of feels, it does feel a little weird. And there was a lot of dark stuff. Like, you know, we were not like, there were a lot of the bands in the horror punk scene that were like nice Christian boys.
Yeah.
Who lived very wholesome existences.
Right. They just happened to love horror and the music.
They dressed up like werewolves and zombies and whatever and played horror music. And we would bring them to our town and to our scene. And like, they would be like, oh crap. Like, this is the Lost Boys or something.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are, Dayton, Ohio is weird. You know,
this is
where they brought the Roswell aliens.
Yeah.
This is where the Incredible Hulk is from. Edgar Casey, the psychic, started his career here. Flight. I mean, there's something in the water here that's weird. And you don't have to go far to find, like, just bizarre stuff happening everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's got that, like, you know, I don't know how close you are. Where did you say you're in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, yeah. So like, I think I've actually looked, because, like, I actually, through podcasting, I have another friend, a couple of friends actually that are in Dayton. Natalie and Dina, shout out. So I think I'm about 6.5 hours away.
So, like, are you close to, like, Erie?
No, I'm like right at the bottom, like near Maryland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, gotcha. I'm at the, like, gotcha, the last town before you get into Maryland.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, I guess.
Well, yeah, I was it's okay. I was gonna reference. Yeah, there are those, like, Erie, Pennsylvania for me is a town like that. Like, when we the Jackalopes actually recorded our first live album in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And like, we got there and the club gave us free LSD, which we immediately took and went on stage and recorded the whole thing. I don't remember any of it.
Yeah.
And it was recorded on a realistic Radio Shack cassette tape from the floorboard of somebody's car.
Wow.
And it sounded so good that we had to put it out.
Yeah.
But like, that's a weird town like that. Like, we would go there and people would be like, hey, do you guys want to come to this satanic orgy after the show? And we'd be like, no, but thank you very much for
thanks for the offer.
We're gonna go ahead and drive back to Dayton now.
Not trying to get sacrificed tonight.
But that's, you know, that was that scene in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was very weird. Like that movie Doom Generation.
Yeah,
like, I think that captures it fairly well.
Yeah,
like, it's all like a Nine Inch Nails video or something. Yeah. So that's what the Jackalopes were bubbling out of. You know,
yeah,
a lot of leather pants and eyeliner.
Living the life. I mean, you know. Well, it's funny, man, because, like, I don't know, I find myself cranking Burning Down the World a lot more lately, because, like, it just seems like things are just getting worse and worse and worse.
I was reading recently about the National Institute of Mental Health mice and rat experiments in the 60s and 70s, which is what the movie The Secret of NIMH, the cartoon, is based on these rats or whatever. And they were talking about the behavioral sink, that when a civilization of mice or rats gets to a particular level, everything changes suddenly and drastically, and groups start clumping together and warring against each other, and they get rapey and they eat their babies, and the mothers stop taking care of their young, and all of this kind of stuff. And I'm like, it seems like we're in a behavioral sink right now a little
bit. I don't know what it's going to take to get out of that, but I don't think it's going to end well, but I guess we'll see.
I mean, at the NIM research center, they just drowned the mice, so that might, I don't know if that's the answer here, to drown us all, but
I guess we'll find out.
That's like a dark turn.
Yeah, it was.
I don't want to be drowned.
Let's get back on to something a little happier. So like when I was setting up the interview, and this is another thing I love about the Jackalopes, because like there's so many songs that are just like, I'll find myself putting on repeat. And then I recently discovered you guys did a fucking Ramones cover.
Yes.
And holy shit, dude, I've been listening to that shit on repeat, like all day long at work while I'm working. Tell me about that, man. Why did that sit and not get released for so long?
We did a few Ramones covers in our live catalog.
Yeah.
Gigi used to do the Motorhead song, R-A-M-O-N-E-S, Ramones. Yeah. That was my break because I've always been a big guy.
Yeah.
But you know, we started the Jackalopes and I had been in a band where I was playing the guitar and singing. So it's kind of like you sing and then you play and then you sing and then you play.
Yeah.
The Jackalopes, I was free of the guitar. So it was just singing. So I packed it all in there. Well, I found that about 15 minutes into a set, I couldn't breathe anymore and I had to go do fat guy stuff in the back by the drums, which is breathing and chugging water.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm fat too, so I get it.
Right? So to cover that spot, the guys would do R-E-M-O-N-E-S. So that was, we did that when we recorded that one. That one was on, I can't remember. We released it, but way back. And then we did a couple other ones. We did Pet Sematary and several.
Seems appropriate.
But You Should Never Have Opened That Door or whatever. I always mess up the title.
Yeah.
That one we did for a Ramones tribute that we were asked to be on. I can't remember who all was there were several big bands on it. I think the Donnas were supposed to be on it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
A bunch of bands of that era and that ilk. And so we did that song and then it never came out. So it just sort of sat on the shelf, and then it being a cover, you know, there's a minor expense to releasing that,
right?
You know, where you have to kind of prepay for the licensing and whatnot. So we just kind of sat on it because since it was a cover, let's not make the CD cost $75 extra by having this song be on there. So it never made it out. And then during the early bit of the pandemic, I got into a bunch of my old VHS tapes and I had a bunch of VHS tapes of Jackalopes performances and I just wanted to share it. And it's kind of, and I put like one out as like here's a live show, but it's kind of boring to watch a static shot of a band from across the room. So I wanted to chop it up and edit it. And instead of editing it to something that I had already released, I decided to go into the vault and see what I had that hadn't been released. And there were a few things that weren't released, but not many. We put most everything that we recorded out, but that one, it just had a really good pace. It was a really good performance. I was really bummed out it didn't come out when it didn't come out. And so I kind of rediscovered it and it was like, it was just such a good rhythm. So it was fun to cut a video to that. So I sat down and edited together these performances and made, and it's, you know, a lot of the performances that are in the video are from the Gigi era and the JJ era, and then a couple different drummers, but I edited the whole thing. So it looks like, and feels like it's the original OG Jackalopes lineup with Gigi and me and Ron and Kyle 13. Mm-hmm. So, we really loved when we put the band together, it was the Misfits, the Ramones, and Motorhead. That was the three, that's the Holy Trinity.
Fuck yeah. Motorhead is my all-time favorite band. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
And that we all agreed on too. Like, I loved Kiss. Ronnie, the guitar player, loved Kiss. Gigi and Kyle could not care less about Kiss.
Yeah.
Gigi is a wrestling guy. So when Kiss finally got a wrestler at a certain point in time, he would discuss Kiss with me.
Yeah.
I love Motley Crue. We've got a song about it.
Love it.
We didn't all agree on all of those influences, right. But the Misfits, the Ramones, and Motorhead were the ones we came back to over and over again. And as long as we were hitting in that ballpark, that's what was up. So we did at least 20 Misfits covers during our whole time together. And, Sam Hain songs or Samhain or however you say
it. I think it is supposed to be Samhain, but I think Samhain, it's, but yeah.
It sounds cooler to say Sam Hain.
It does. It also sounds pretentious if you correct somebody. It's like Sam Hain.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's Samhain.
Actually, the original Celtic. Like, come on, man. I've heard Danzig has been mispronouncing words from day one.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he mispronounced that one for a while too.
Yeah, exactly.
So we did those, we did Motorhead. We didn't cover a lot of their songs. Motorhead was more about like an attitude than anything else. But we did a DRI cover that's on a big DRI tribute. Mr. Bungle is on that. Duff McKagan's original band, The Farts, is on there. There's some really cool bands on that one. And I can't remember what other tributes we did. We did several covers. But Ramon songs were, I mean, the crowd just, even if it's an obscure one, like that one, the crowd just lights up for it.
Like, absolutely. Well, and I think part of the reason with that is I don't think I've ever heard a bad Ramones cover.
Right. You'll be seeing a terrible band and then they go into Blitzkrieg Bop and you're like, oh, I can't believe doing this. And it, within a few bars, you're like,
yeah.
Hey, ho!
Let's go. Totally. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, dude. Yep. I love it. So is there any chance of the Jackalopes ever getting back together? Because I know there was a show a couple years ago that I was pissed because I wasn't able to make it to. And I was really pissed because there was those shirts you guys had that looked cool as fuck. They were only at the show.
Yeah. It's a never say never situation for me. I got offered right before the pandemic. I got offered to do a Jackalopes reunion at a horror festival in Memphis. And it was I think Blitzkid was on it. Nice. And it was all our era.
Yeah.
All those bands. It was like 10 or 20 bands. I can't remember. And so I wanted to do that show. Mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of revisit those songs and I wanted to go back and see that. So I did put together a band. It was myself, Dan Canzonieri from Electric Frankenstein,
nice.
Brian Brady, who's a tattoo artist here at my shop, but he's also in some big crust punk thrash bands back in the day, Erica from Cricket Bows was going to sing on stage with us, and we were going to do the Jackalopes thing but more. So It was being billed as Reverend Chadwell's from the Jackalopes on the show poster or whatever.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what we were going to call it by the time we got there. We talked about the Jackalopes at one point splintered into a thing called Wolf Cult that I thought about using. But when you Google Wolf Cult, you find that there's like a neo-Nazi group somewhere that uses that name. So
that sucks.
We don't so much love that idea.
Yeah.
But
the wrong kind of folks showing up.
So I definitely feel like I will... those are my songs, and a lot of those songs I had before the Jackalopes even existed.
Right.
They were COH songs, or they were just like folk songs, acoustic guitar into Burning Down the World was before the Jackalopes, and it was acoustic guitar into a four track kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was going to work for a punk band, but Gigi insisted that it would.
I'm glad he did.
It worked. I think that I'll always probably go back to those songs, but it's weird. When we got together to play those songs for that festival that got canceled ultimately because of COVID, when we got together to play the songs, it was real weird because we thought we were really giving it given it our all, and then Brian pointed out that we were playing at like half speed, and I didn't believe it. I'm like, no way, this is the right speed. And then I listened to the original, I'm like, it sounds like the Chipmunks compared to
So I can dig it. So I might be able to get to a show at some point.
You know what? So the Jackalopes is full of drama.
Yeah.
The Jackalopes.
As any punk band would be. I mean,
there was a lot. We went through a lot of members. There were a lot of drummers. There were a couple guitar players. There were a few bass players.
Kind of get a Spinal Tap situation here. You know, this band has had 34 members.
it really got close to that. Yeah. At one point I added backup singers, which of course that inflates the member roster list.
Yeah.
But as it stands right now, I am on decent terms with Ron. I'm on decent terms with Kyle. I'm on decent terms with our, you know, other drummers, Nathan and Dan, and but Gigi and I don't talk. We had the two architects of the thing are not in agreement. But you know, it's ultimately long ago I made sure that this is such a weird thing to talk about, but it's my brand, and it's my I can do it again, but right now I don't think there would be an original Jackalopes reunion with Gigi, and I don't think that JJ wants to do it. JJ hasn't picked up a guitar in forever, I'm sure there could be something, but I don't know that it'll be ever that. And again, I don't have the power that
can't
I
tell the future. Yeah.
Either. Yeah. So,
yeah. Okay. Okay. So I'll keep a lookout for that then. Okay. So I think it's interesting. So like you take like the Jackalopes to Cricket Bows, and there, it shows a real music, like a real evolution of your musical expression. It's kind of like it grows with you. You have this high energy, dirty, badass punk vibe going to this like trippy psychedelic vibe. So like what pushed you more towards Cricket Bows music?
It was a lot of things. The biggest one being that I didn't want to repeat myself.
Yeah.
I think it would have been really easy for me to turn around and either just keep the Jackalopes going with new members or to do another thing that was similar, or a lot of guys that were my age at the point that I made that transition, they were starting to go into cover bands or bar bands and things. And like, we're not chasing that anymore. We're going to go play other people's music. And like, that's never been why I've done it. And if you really had the time to pay attention to the entire arc of COH to the Jackalopes to Cricket Bows, there's some weird stuff that kind of, it's all the same songwriter. So there are things that sort of reference each other throughout the whole arc. And COH definitely started as like a recording project that turned into a live band. And it was originally more psychedelic and weird. Yeah. And then it became like when COH finally became a live band, we just honed in on the harder aspects of it, what pleased the crowd, I guess, and what was fun to do on stage. It's not fun to beat bloop on a synthesizer and turn tape knobs. And that's not fun on stage.
Right.
So. And then the Jackalopes was really just a super streamlined, like, tightened up version of that in a new form. And then Cricket Bows, like, I kind of had to have this rebirth, and it was the Jackalopes had broken up a half dozen times by this point, and like we'd break up and we're never doing it again, and then I'd get offered a show somewhere, and okay, well, we're putting a new version of the band together. And then we got pregnant with my first daughter, Presley. And I really started feeling like what I was doing on stage in the Jackalopes and the persona that I had to sort of hold up and be, because the character that I was was like, I was a fighter and I was a badass. And I was, like tough guy and scary and satanic and evil and whatever. And like, you can do that on stage and then not be that, which was what my reality was. I wasn't off stage, but I kind of was too, because that reverend character really fed over into my tattoo career too. So my thing that pays me money is tattooing. Right. You know, being in a punk rock band that didn't pay the bills.
Right.
So, but I was that character through both things.
Yeah.
Because I was, it was one crowd fed the other piece.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I started to feel like just a little too rough around the edges to bring this baby girl home to me. And I'm scary Elvis hair and pointy sideburns and facial piercings and leather jacket with Charles Manson painted on the back and all of that kind of stuff. I just started to feel like that, like it was too much trappings and it was, stuff would have like, and I'm 6'2", I'm 300 pounds probably. I don't even know how much I weigh.
Yeah.
It might be more than that, but I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
I look like a wrestler or something.
Yeah.
And I'm actually a very calm and sweet-hearted guy.
Right.
But I have this bigness that I can use to sort of write a situation. And so I was always the guy stepping in and having physical things at shows. And
right.
I was beating my body up. Like on stage, the Jackalopes physically broke me in a lot of ways. Like,
oh, I bet.
The way that I pushed on stage, like a lot of bands, a lot of singers sing hard and heavy, but it's like it's from somewhere else and it's trained.
Yeah.
And then you see people like if you look at Phil Anselmo from Pantera now, like his voice is just trashed.
Yeah.
He's, so the Jackalopes, man, I've got internal issues from things that I did to my body. Like I hurt myself. Like I beat myself with, the microphone. And
right.
I didn't go full Gigi Allen by any means, but like
heading in that direction though,
it was intense. And so like I had a point where I just wanted to be soft.
Yeah.
And be like a dad and all of that. And all along the way, it wasn't obvious, but like psychedelic music and sort of like the literary side of what we were doing. Yeah. And that was always kind of hidden in there. If you listen to the Jackalopes, there's all kinds of weird breaks where it goes psychedelic,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in the middle of Redneck Zombies or Big Memories or whatever. Like, I'm hinting at the psychedelic experience the whole time. So 69.
Yeah.
And so when I decided to do something completely different, it started with my other brother. Mm-hmm. I have a brother named JJ and a brother named Jared, and Jared was in a band called the Bang Tail.
Mm-hmm.
And they were amazing, awesome band.
Yeah.
And so, but very different than the Jackalopes and stuff.
Right.
So I started writing songs for them. I was doing 4-track demos and I would play all the instruments, and it was more along this like 60s 70s kind of funky rock vibe.
Yeah.
And then I would give it to them and they would do their thing with it. And and so I had this workflow going, mm-hmm. for sort of creating music, and I just kept going. And I've always recorded at home. I've always done demos that are like pretty elaborate. That was recording is way more important to me as an artist than performing live. Like, I'm good at performing live. I have a tank of a body that I can throw into that.
Yeah.
And do it. But like, it's not as good. It's never as good.
Right.
You know, it's rare. The live album almost always has to be pretty heavily overdubbed.
Yeah.
To match the real experience, or I call the recording the real experience. It's not the real experience.
Right. But
for me, that's what drew me into music was production and that. Like, my favorite bands are Artificial. The Monkees is my all time favorite band.
Yeah.
Yes. Kiss is my second all-time favorite band.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Danzig's not really that scary. You
know? Right.
All of my favorite bands are kind of character bands.
And
so, so I kept recording and I was just recording stuff for me, mm-hmm. and for my wife. And it was like, I wasn't taking it outside the house.
Yeah.
But then I would like listen to it. And I'm like, oh, these three or four songs kind of sound like they're something. This isn't just, because I would do a song that sounded like this genre and a song that sounded like that genre. But then there started to bubble up from that well of different things. There started to bubble up this thing that I didn't know what I was going to call it or anything like that.
Right.
But I felt like it was more psychedelic. I felt like it was more rooted in like what, like the Flaming Lips or Beck or something like that. Like Ween, that kind of a vibe. And then I started playing that stuff for people, and they started to dig it, and that made me want to do more.
Yeah.
And so I think it was 2010. I did the first home released thing, and I called it Home.
Yeah.
And it was like some of those songs were from the middle of the jazz. Some of those songs were actually released as Wolf Cult songs at a certain point on a sampler long ago. Some of those songs were going to be Jackalope songs.
Right.
But they were like weird demo versions. Like the first release was way more demo like. And then I put it out just quietly into the internet, and it did really, really well as far as that kind of thing goes. Like we got rave reviews from, and I say we, it was just me, but I got rave reviews from like from Russia to wherever. Like it was kind of blowing up.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do another one now with a little bit more purpose to it.
Yeah.
And it was, and the Cricket Bows name came from another band that
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Another band that I loved is Jane's Addiction. At a certain point, like Jane's Addiction now feels like a Vegas act.
Yeah.
But Jane's Addiction, when Nothing Shocking came out, like that album changed my life. I was listening to King Diamond the day before I got it. And then after that, it was like, you know, it was all over. I was just, you know, it was like, you know, people talk about their first big psychedelic experience where they take acid and they have this thing.
Yeah.
Jane's Addiction's Nothing Shocking did that for me.
Okay.
And then Ritual De Lo Habitual was their second album. And in the song 3 Days, which I consider to be a perfect song on the level of like Stairway to Heaven or something like that.
Yeah.
In that song, Perry Farrell says, "My head, it landed to the sound of cricket bows." And I thought that just encapsulated this vibe.
Yeah.
This like late night thing. I'm recording these songs with headphones on, on a MacBook Pro that's often sitting on my belly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, I did my vocals like in my like lazy boy chair in my living room. And it was like I was recording music when my kid was asleep. So it had that like quality of happening late at night.
Yeah.
So Cricket Bows for me like summed it up. I also like Love to it. Do things. I'm really big on doing things where I like to sort of displace time and reality by, you know, 50 years from now.
Yeah.
If a kid hears Jane's Addiction say, "My head, it landed to the sound of cricket bows."
Yeah.
They're going to go, "What's that?" And they're going to do whatever the future version of Google is.
Yeah.
And they're going to find this band Cricket Bows, and they're going to maybe for a moment go, "Oh, that's what Perry Farrell was listening to."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that kind of like stealing history.
Yeah. In a way.
I like that idea. So Cricket Bows came from that. And
love it.
At one point it was going to be called Unicorn Mud Yolk and all kinds of weird different things. And then in the middle of the second album, again, home recorded, but this time I got Roger Joseph Manning Jr., who was the keyboard player for another favorite band of mine, Jellyfish.
Nice.
From the 90s. He also plays for Beck currently. He's been Beck's keyboard player and songwriting partner for the last 20 years, I think.
Yeah.
He played on Sheryl Crow's albums and AFI's albums and Blink-182's albums. And
everything in between.
And I hired him to play on my second Cricket Bows album.
Yeah.
Because I was doing all this keyboard stuff, but I'm just a Hunt and Peck kind of keyboard player. I'm not a great keyboard player. So I happened to pass across this thing where Roger was talking about the fact that he would do session work remotely for a price that I thought was affordable.
Yeah.
And so I got a hold of him, and of course he had to accept it and want to do it. And I gave him 7 songs. Mm-hmm. He picked 3 songs that sort of, he felt worthy of his mastery.
Yeah.
And so he played keyboards on those 3 songs on the second album. And at that point I started realizing, like, as I was listening to it, I'm like, this sounds like a band. Cause it's me playing the drums or programming the drums. I'm playing the guitar, I'm playing the bass, I'm playing the keys, except for what he did.
Yeah.
All the voices, it's all me. But I'm hearing a band. I'm hearing this fictional band coming to life. And so, I started scouting for guys. At that point, I'm like every day I got obsessed with Joe Cocker and Leon Russell's Mad Dogs and Englishmen, specifically the the movie. It's a concert movie. And I got obsessed with it. And this band, it's like a 17 piece band. Like there's people on stage, like breastfeeding their children and
hippie,
like it's a hippie commune on stage. And I thought, like, what a crazy thing if we had a band that was like 10 people and weird instruments, and like there was an old man in a chair, like feeding a little kid or something. Like, we'll do something weird like that.
Yeah.
So I started looking for those people. And I eventually found four or five other people that ended up becoming Cricket Bows with
me.
And then I did another EP still after that on my own. Like while we were a real band in the basement putting together what would be the next album, but I still had all this stuff. Like, I was still fully in this work mode. So I did another almost full length. It was a 6-song EP called Lid. And then, and I had Andy Gabbard from the Buffalo Killers played on that. He played on 2 or 3 songs on that.
Yeah.
Background vocals. So that was like another little thing to get us some recognition and notice. Like, Andy's amazing songwriter, fantastic guitar player. I tattooed him.
Yeah.
And I tattoo his family and
stuff. Yeah.
And they were kind of really blowing up at that time.
Yeah.
And we're on a cool label and stuff. So anyway, we started working on the real live band, and we did. So there was a trilogy of home recorded things, and then there's another trilogy of the band, which is Diamonds, Communion, and Raised on Rock and Roll. And now we've transitioned into a new phase that we haven't even really shared with anybody yet.
Yeah.
But with the band members that were with us for the last 3 albums are now free to do other things.
Yeah.
And Erica and I, the other vocalist, and I are working on the band very much like how it started when it was just a home recording project for me. She and I are now working like that together.
Yeah.
Weird stuff with, like, it's very similar to what we've done before, but with like more electronics and more weird instruments. Like, she's playing a lot more flute and harp and
nice.
Stuff like that. So we're getting ready to enter into what I think will be the third trilogy in the Cricket Bows.
Okay. That's universe. Awesome, so, dude.
Yeah. So it's been a weird road, but all the bands seem to go in about 10 or 12 year spurts. Like,
yeah. It was
10 years of COH and 10 years of the Jackalopes. And now we're just passing 10 years of Cricket Bows.
So. Yeah. Dude, that's awesome. And then the whole time you've been like running a tattoo business.
Yeah, Wells and Company Custom Tattoo. I have been doing that I've been tattooing since 1992.
Wow.
And it's been a long, long, weird road. And tattooing's changed drastically and whatever. Yeah. But I've had Wells and Company since I think 2004 or 2005. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I'm terrible with dates and things.
Yeah.
But we're on our third location now. We kind of, and just in the same way that I tend to like to change things with the bands and the vibe and the whatever after a certain amount of time, we kind of do the same thing with the tattoo shop. So we did 5 years at our last location. It was downtown. It was a big, we could have events there. We had bands play there.
Yeah.
We had art events there and all of that kind of thing. And then the pandemic happened and we kind of went like, that's not a good idea to have 100 people in here ever again, probably. So we kind of then, now we've gone the other direction. We have a private appointment only studio. It's a kind of historic house in
nice
old hometown of Vandalia, Ohio, right on the edge of Dayton. And there's a little bit of acreage around us. It's on a main road, but it feels like it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I've got an awesome crew of artists that work here with me and for me. My oldest daughter, Presley, is 17. She's a tattooer. My
nice. Sort of
the younger tattooer here. So the whole time doing the bands, and it's funny because you don't make any money from doing the bands, but the band's the band's the main thing.
Like, yeah.
The day job of tattooing, though it pays for everything, it will absolutely suffer and go, you guys take care of the place, I'm going to play music. But doing the tattoo shop the whole time.
Yeah.
Also, I've done t-shirts and album covers for bands from, that I'm friends with, Electric Frankenstein, yeah. Buffalo Killers and stuff like that, but done stuff for like Faster Pussycat and LA Guns, Turbo Negro, and
yeah,
you know, just a crazy list of bands related to, you know, all of the different scenes that used to do clothing designs. Went through a bit. I did a design clothes for Sourpuss Clothing. I did a bunch of like monster designs and stuff. It was definitely more related to the, to the Jackalopes, Reverend Chad persona.
Yeah.
But I just stay busy. I can't stop. I don't play video games. I don't do much that it almost has to leave something behind when I'm done. I need video or audio or words or something left behind from whatever it is that I've put my time into.
Absolutely. So, I totally understand that. Cause like you know, I started podcasting like, you know, about a year ago. It's just been like drawn into it, like in the, you know, the creative process and all that. So I just like every night I'm just like, I got to do something. I can't like, if I take a break on like one night, I'm just like, I should be doing something right now. Like, what could I be doing?
it never stops. It never stops, but it's awesome. I mean, that's the fuel. That's that sort of creative muse. Once it grabs you, you're done for.
Exactly. And you know, it's funny. I do play video games, but I don't remember the last time I got a chance to play one. It's just not a priority. So it's just,
I've gotten but it's been so long ago, like when Tony Hawk first came out, like that was the last, but I would get stuck playing that for like 8 hours. Yeah. And then like everywhere I went, like I was rail sliding at the grocery store in my mind. And so I can get sucked into a game.
Yeah.
And when video games first sort of like got bigger, like the original, like, What was the zombie game that's
Resident Evil?
Yeah, when Resident Evil first came out, like I sucked so bad at playing those games, but I loved watching people play those games.
Yeah.
I was still in like Pitfall Harry Atari mode.
Yeah.
When those things came out. But I went through a phase, but I definitely can sort of pace my life by, I remember when the Pong paddle boards came home, and then we got an Atari. That was like a hand-me-down Atari. It was totally like 5 years after Atari came out.
Oh shit.
Skipped Nintendo, but
see, that's where I started, was the first Nintendo.
My wife and I started dating in high school.
Yeah.
And our first purchase together while we were still in high school.
Yeah.
We pulled our money and bought or maybe we were just out. Anyway, we bought a Sega Genesis. That was our first, unit as a couple.
Yeah.
So, and I played, that's a good one. Sonic Pinball and Crew Ball, and I like the fake pinball games.
Love it. But, I love it. Well, at some point, I don't know when, I definitely want to try to come out to Dayton and get tattooed from you, man, because like that's like this has been absolutely phenomenal. Like I said, huge fan, so I really really appreciate you being here. Would it be okay if I put You Should Never Have Opened That Door video at the end of this, so that other people can check it out? Awesome. I always like to ask, so I'll put that at the end so everybody can check that out. And yeah, dude, so any other anything else you want to let anybody know about, or anything you want to drop?
No, really. I mean, if you're interested in any of the stuff I'm talking about, I share this kind of stuff all the time on my Facebook and Instagram, and I've kind of let all the websites and stuff go. Yeah. It's just social media now, but we're always doing something fun. It's whether it's Cricket Bows or one of the offshoot bands or art stuff and all of that. Like that, I'm always kind of promoting something, but I'm also really bad at doing it when it comes time to. Is there anything that people should check out? No, I'm cool.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Find me on social media, and I'll sell something to you over there.
Love it.
Man, thank you so much for having me on. It's super cool. I love the conversation.
Thank you for being here, man. Like I said, like, this is absolute honor. I've been listening to you guys for the longest time.
That's cool.
Yeah. So if you ever want to come back on the show, you're open door, come on back. Awesome. And hopefully at some point I get to get out to Dayton and we'll meet in person.
6.5 hours, man. If that's all it takes, that's nothing. You can listen to a few podcasts. what is that? That's in podcast speak, that's two Rogans. It'll take you two Rogans
yeah.
to get here.
Yeah. Or, you know, if I'm doing some last podcast on the left, that'll be like maybe one and a half.
Maybe one. Maybe one. Absolutely. So, yeah, man, anytime. Love to see you.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks.